This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. I say this every time, but I am so excited to be on this show. Today, we have one of my friends who is a super cool scientist. And wait until you hear this question that we are going to be solving and talking about today that goes right in line with me being a galactic space geek.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. So what is the question?
How can physics help us capture an alien?
How will physics catch an alien? Oh, I want to hear this one. It's going to be so exciting. So who is our guest today?
That's right. Today we have a good friend of mine. Her name is Melinda Bradley. She is a physicist and a space education specialist. And she is going to teach us all about how physics is going to help us catch aliens. Welcome to the show, Melinda.
Hi. Thank you, Jennifer and Jeff, for having me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We are so excited. Now, physics is one of my very favorite topics. So I have to ask you, how did you get into physics?
Yeah, and that is a great question, because as you're going through college, you kind of rethink, why am I doing physics? Why am I doing this to myself? But at a very young age, I found myself questioning everything. How do airplanes fly? How do boats work? How are they on top of the water? How do seasons work? Just questioning everything around me. And then I fell in love with space. So the two hand-to-hand just made sense. And I think with any STEM field, there's never an end to learning. We gain new knowledge, and the old knowledge can sometimes have new information to it. So I love the never-ending learning experience.
Oh, yay. Good answer. Good answer.
That is a very good answer. And I love that you knew it early on because you paid attention to all of the questions you were asking about how everything worked. So as you were learning physics, was there something particular? Obviously, physics covers just about everything. Yes. Was there something particular about physics that really caught your attention?
What really caught my attention was basically looking at the stars, planets, distances between all the stars. And what I've said before was we are on a giant floating rock in the middle of the universe. So just how big the universe is and life on other planets is very fascinating. Are there microbial life, humans that look like us on other planets? Are we going to be able to find them?
Yeah. Wow, exactly. But I love your idea about this. So we've had experts on the show before. I'm sure you've heard of Hubble's Deep Field. So yes. We had Dr. Bob Williams. He was the director of the Hubble program that found Deep Field that time. So I'm with you. The fact that the Earth has the right mix of atmosphere, temperature, pressure, gravity to have humans is so amazing. So do we know anything? Like, have we found anything on any other planets I know not real stuff, but even inklings of what was there or what might be there?
Yeah, so we have found what we think are oceans of water on, Saturn's moons, on Mars. There's not a lot, but we think there's some in the soil. So from what we know on Earth, where there's water, there should be life. Yep. So kind of those inklings of, well, we think there's water there, well, let's look at that further and see if we can find little fish, or let's see if we can find something in that water, because that's what we know on Earth.
And when you were talking about, when I asked you the question of if something caught you, and you said just how big the universe is, all of the examples that you just mentioned, and I love the whole searching for life and following the water, and we now know there's a lot more water in our solar system than we ever knew before. We're only talking about our solar system so far. When you take that beyond the solar system, there's what, thousands of exoplanets around other stars. So we really are just scratching the surface of this whole line of science.
We are.
So how is physics going to help us snag that alien, find out that evidence? How is that going to happen?
Yeah, so kind of what I said before was that, yeah, we follow that water and we're kind of going off of what we know on Earth,
right,
the perfect conditions for life. So what we know about physics, what we've observed on Earth and what should be in the universe, we are going to follow those laws of physics to search, follow the water, and then explore to see if we can find something in those oceans of water. So laws of physics that we know now, we can apply everywhere else in the universe.
So are you talking about Newton's laws, like forces in motion, or are you talking about different laws of physics?
Yeah, so we can talk about Newton's laws. We can talk about gravity, mm-hmm, friction, density, buoyancy. A lot of these forces are all a part of the physics realm that we can apply to other planets. So if we go to an ocean world outside of our solar system, we can take a boat with us, and we know our boat should go on top of the water. So using those forces to explore and then catch those aliens, not just find them, we're going to catch them.
Okay. I have actually, being Galactic Space Geek Jeff, I've actually never really thought about it in this way. I love the fact that we are going to be sending spacecraft to Europa and Enceladus, moons of Saturn and Jupiter, because we believe they have under ice liquid oceans. But I never really thought about the fact that NASA can build underwater robots knowing that they will work the same way that they do here on Earth. I never connected those two dots.
Yes, an underwater submarine on a moon of Saturn, a galactic submarine,
will work the same way it does here, as long as it's liquid water and not liquid something else.
Exactly.
And do we know that it's liquid water? Have we already determined that?
So we do know from studying Europa and Enceladus, Europa should have, I believe it was 2.5 times the water on that moon that we do on Earth. So it is a very, very dense and heavy moon when it comes to water.
Yeah, well, because water weighs a lot. Like, people don't really think about that. But, you know, if you have a bucket that's empty and then you have a bucket that's full of water, there's a big weight difference there. So when you said heavy, that makes sense. If this moon is full of water, then it's probably, you know, kind of heavy. So that's the idea, is we're going to send boats or submarines or whatever to go down into the water. Is that what they're planning to do?
I don't think as of yet they're planning, you know, my hopes for an underwater submarine, but
that'd be cool.
That would be my dream. I would love to be a part of that mission. But I do know that we are planning to go back to Venus, yep, and that was announced a couple days ago. We're going to send another mission there, and hopefully none of the technology melts. So that will be a great mission coming up.
So I do remember recently in the news, months ago, there was an announcement about a chemical in the atmosphere of Venus that led and I forget the name of it, it had one of those really long chemical names, but the press went crazy on, life in the atmosphere of Venus. So, so far, we have not found life anywhere else, correct?
That is correct. So we haven't confirmed life on Mars, Venus, nothing within our solar system or outside yet. And I say yet.
I love the yet. We love teaching kids the yet because who knows, they may be the one to grow up to do it. So I don't want to get to the question about like what happens when we find it or when we find life, living life, which are aliens. But what do you think it will be like for us if we find extinct life?
That is a great question.
What do you think it's going to be like? What are we going to find?
Yeah. And that's something that I haven't thought about a lot, extinct life. When I hear you say that, I think a lot about Mars, extinct life. And because we know there were oceans of water on Mars, and we have found evidence of that water, just not life. So extinct life, I feel, would be just as exciting as if it were living, because it means that life was able to sustain outside of Earth. I think it would look like, I always go back to like either little fishies or little tiny microbial life that might be very hard to see. And that's why it's important for our rovers, Perseverance, Curiosity, to dig up those samples and for us to explore those samples.
Yeah. So you're also an educator. So how do you teach physics and stuff like this to kids? Like, where do you start with them, or where do you recommend a kid start if they're interested in physics?
Yeah, I always like to say the first very good place to start is to have that passion and to keep the passion going, keep learning. As an educator, I always draw into my experience when I was young on always asking those why questions and then teaching about them. So I teach a lot about, why do we have seasons? Why do we have weather? What are the, you know, parts of weather that make them severe? Hurricanes. So I draw on these why questions, and then I teach about them in their age range.
And I have a little bit of insight on what you do for work, since we work together. Now, you are one of the educators for probably our coolest education program, because you get to see students repeatedly, where it's many more visits than a field trip, which is just a one-time thing, through your junior space entrepreneur program. I know you guys have a lot of really cool hands-on activities in there. What are one or two that really snag you and the students?
Yeah, so our JSET program, for short, is kind of a high school level education piece where we give you a mission to Mars. And every part of mission to Mars is a learning tool. So we get to play with robots, solar panels. What would it be like to launch to Mars, make food, oxygen, and come back? So a couple of my favorite lessons are, you get to create your own solar panel. You get to work on energy and learn to create that energy as if you're on another planet. And then another lesson that I really like is our Orion capsule challenge, is your re-entry back to Earth, because it's important to come back to our home planet. So students are given tasks on how to land astronauts in a capsule safely, and what are those tools and very important parts of doing that and landing it in the ocean. So I love the JSET program, and you get to go to Mars and back. So that is very cool.
Well, and all of these, as I'm listening to you describe, all of these are physics concepts, right? Like, they have to learn, you know, how to make energy. They have to learn, what is the gravity on the, you know, on the other planet? How are they going to push off? I think one of the coolest things that I learned on the show, and there's so many cool things, but was when we were talking to astronaut Katie Coleman at the beginning, and she was saying how they had to move this table this big heavy table or something in the International Space Station. They were like, how do you do it? And on Earth, everyone's like, well, you just pick it up and move it. There's no gravity, right? So, or very little gravity. So how do you push off of something? And she said, you have to like hold on to the grip or have one of your, you know, the other astronauts hold you while you push, because you have nothing to push against.
Oh,
and
wow.
Talk about physics there, right? That's kind of mind boggling to figure out how do you do stuff. But that's exactly what you're saying. This Mission to Mars program is kids have to think, like extrapolate what's it like to be on Mars, right?
Yeah. So a lot of physics, we also draw in a lot of biology, chemistry. So we try to tie in STEM sciences. And with that, you learn the entrepreneur piece of they're also learning how to create a business. And hopefully these high schoolers are able to maybe create a space product or technology that help us later on future space missions. So it all ties together, all the STEM fields and learning how to be an entrepreneur.
In high school, man, I want to go back to high school. Here's the, like, our podcast is called Solve It for Kids. And this Mission to Mars launching all the way through, you said, creating your own food and creating your own energy and coming back and splashing down safely. It sounds like it's basically a checklist of problems that they need to solve one after the other.
Yes. And I wish I had this in high school too. I think it just, as I'm teaching it and educating the students, I feel like I'm a student sometime. I'm having so much fun playing with everything, using spherical robots and Ozobots, color coding, and just the robotics piece and STEM field. I'm at home when I am teaching that program.
Physics really does cover everything.
You had me a robot. So I think robots are just so cool. You know, especially, you know, the Robonaut, which I know they don't really use anymore in the ISS. But when they first had that up there, I just thought that was the coolest thing ever.
For all of us space geeks, that's what we thought this future. That's what we thought 2021 was going to be like.
Yeah.
I thought I'd have robot coworkers.
Yeah. It depends on where you are. Not too far off, but.
And that draws into when you say that, I did an article on the robot Simon, who is up on the ISS.
Yep.
And is kind of a helper tool for the astronauts. If they don't know how to fix an object, they say, hey, Simon, can you give me the instructions to fix the airlock? And Simon helps them. And the Space Symposium a couple years ago here in Colorado Springs, they had Simon there at the booth. And I remember walking in and just being like, Simon, it's you.
Were you expecting him to just know your name and be like, oh, Melinda, I've been waiting to see you.
Yes, I heard you did some research on me. I was a little too excited. And I think the people at the booth thought I was going to run off with him. And so I had to be careful.
So before we get to your challenge, before we did the podcast, you were mentioning your super cool project from school on radiation and being space geeks, being galactic space geek Jeff, longer duration missions to the moon and especially to Mars, radiation is one of those top priority items that we have not fully solved yet. Can you tell our listeners about your project?
Yes. So I did that as my senior project to get my physics degree. And
must have worked.
Yes. That research was very interesting because I learned what we do right now for missions to the International Space Station or any mission, our current spacesuits are not designed to block radiation. They are designed to be a life support system, but have nothing to do with radiation. So I explored the different materials that are best to block radiation. What would make sense for the future? So came up with this reinforced polyethylene material. And I know that's a huge word, but it's like a plastic. If you think of a saran wrap plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it blocks almost all space radiation. So finding a way to add that to the spacesuits, if we go to Mars, using that material, or right now we use aluminum a little bit, but if we switch it to that plastic material, we will be able to save our astronauts from damage to our lungs, liver, and everything internal and outside.
Wow. And is it just about as thin as Saran wrap, like you were describing?
It is as thin and half the weight of aluminum.
So
that's awesome.
So now I'm keying on the entrepreneurial part. Is it inexpensive to add to this? Because no, because she brought this up, right?
There's a JSEP question for sure. Yeah.
And this is something that kids of all ages, I mean, adults too, need to understand is the financial part of it. Because that's, to me, I'm kind of like, well, why haven't they figured this out? And maybe they have, but it's just not cost effective. So that's what I'm asking. Is it cost effective? Do you know?
I don't have an answer for you when it comes to cost effectiveness. I do know that research is now going from aluminum to that new material. So I think it's a matter of newer research and then understanding, does it work long-term or is it cost effective? So we need to do more research before we fully apply it.
But that's, again, that's what you're talking about, physics, using physics to go out into space to possibly find an alien someday. It's all based on physics, engineering, material science, engineering, all of these things. So, you know, if you are a kid just picking your, you know, your degree, there's so many cool things that you can go into now, right?
There are so many different parts of science and physics that I learned when I got to college. You have energy science. Physics is just, you know, an umbrella term. You can go into nuclear physics, astrophysics, material physics that we talked about, just biophysics. You can combine the sciences. There's so much you can study that I don't think there's any limit. You can combine all of it.
Not that we want you to be overwhelmed, kids, but you can combine all of it.
You can pick a very specific part of physics and just run away with it and have an awesome time.
Well, and I kind of knew a little bit about your research project with radiation. What I didn't know, and I just learned along with our listeners, is the actual research out in the world is now moving towards the material you did your research on. That has to be cool to watch and follow.
It is very cool to where I wanted to keep studying it. And then that entrepreneur piece is, well, maybe I should create something and present it to, you know, NASA or these spacesuit designers. It's, you know, when you find new research is moving to a new, better material, then go ahead and try to create it and make something cool out of it. And you can create a business out of it.
That sounds really amazing. And you know, and there you go, kids, right there is something that you can take a look at. My suggestion would be, because we've got pretty wide, is pick something that you enjoy first that piques your interest and then see where it takes you. Go from there, right? Because it can be a little overwhelming. I've had three kids have to pick their majors before they get into college. And let's see, only one of them stayed with the same major all the way through. The other two switched majors, which is fine, right? Like, you don't know you like it until you get into it. But along those lines, this has been awesome. We could talk to you forever, Melinda. But do you have a challenge for our young listeners, perhaps?
I do have a challenge. And this one, I wanted our listeners to kind of take a look around their house or even just as they're going throughout the day. I know we've been spending a lot of time in our houses recently, but just observing forces around you. So a couple of examples. When you drop an object accidentally and you say, oh man, you know, I just dropped that on the floor. That is gravity at work. So that is something to remind yourself every time. And then if you have a bath toy that you take a bath with and it floats on top of the water. You're looking at density and buoyancy. That is how mm-hmm. boats work in real life in the ocean, lakes. And then also a super fun one, just don't slip, is if you have a smooth wooden floor in your house and you put on socks, you can slide along the surface. And that is friction. Oh. On see the difference between taking your socks on and off, you will be more slippery with your socks on. So those three examples are awesome to kind of look at around the house and see those physics forces at work.
I know the first thing I am doing when I get home today, and my wife is going to look at me like I am a goofball.
Yeah.
Why are you sliding across the kitchen floor?
Yes. I knew that was going to be the one you're going to pick.
Because Melinda told me to.
I should say, disclaimer, Jeff, don't try this at home.
just be safe when you try it, right?
Yes. Be safe and just make sure you are observing what's going on and don't fall.
Well, I think that's great. This has been so much fun. I love learning about physics. So thank you so much for being on the Solve It for Kids podcast, Melinda.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, Jeff. This was a blast. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Melinda. This was a great time. I will see you at work.
Yes, I will see you at work.
Whoa! Didn't I tell you Miss Melinda was going to be bringing some amazing knowledge? Wasn't that fun, Jennifer?
Oh, that was fabulous. And of course, we're talking about my favorite thing, physics!
Physics, which kind of covers everything, which means I love Melinda's challenge on how she brought that right into all of our listeners' homes and gave them a challenge of finding physics forces happening around their house. This is going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. And I can't wait to see what kids come up with. So kids, make sure you go to our website, solveitforkids.com. There's information about Melinda, about the challenge. And of course, we have a book list. So if you want to look up more things about physics, there's a book giveaway and a book list you can take a look at. Again, our website, solveitforkids.com. And don't forget to tag us on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, which is @KidsSolve.
We have got so much going on right now, Jennifer. Our social media is going crazy. People are forgetting that we have a book giveaway, so we've been reminding them about that for every episode. So be sure to get involved, interact with us, leave us comments, show us that you're doing those challenges, and get ready for the next episode.
And we'll see you next week on Solve It
for Kids.